overflowing with love. I am overflowing with happiness. I am filled with the power to make a change. You create a brand new life. I am overflowing.
Welcome to the podcast of the Sunday Celebration from the Center for Spiritual Living in Huntsville, Alabama. We hope you feel the grace, the beauty, and the love of our community as you hear the message of the week.
That's a lovely Karen Drucker song called Breathe. Yeah, gosh, it's good to see everybody here today. Wow. So I welcome our beautiful shamanic school. You know, before I became a minister, I studied with Michael Harner in Atlanta. And I remember when they were pounding on the drums and we went to the lower world and I found my spirit animal. I thought it would be something beautiful like a gazelle or an elephant, and out waddled a penguin. And it's been my spirit animal ever since, until baby Speck died, and now she's kind of hangs in there whenever we invoke our spirit animal. But there's something really beautiful about that connection that Stephen and his community brings to this dance that we're doing here on planet Earth. This morning we did a beautiful breathing ceremony, and they talk about Pachamama as the mother. You know, and then they talk about Pachipapa as the universe, the father and the mother that are all connected to us. And we are like this threshold between heaven and earth. And Stephen and I were kind of reflecting how all paths really are pointing to the same discovery process. But what's really important is that this truth of our being awakens within us. You know, the Greek word for truth means that which unhides itself. Well, that's kind of profound, isn't it? So the truth is there all along. We just get to experience it when it reveals itself to us. And it was Oliver Wendell Holmes that said, the truth is incontrovertible. And it's also a saying that the facts are the enemy of the truth. So we're not here to deal in facts or concepts or belief systems, because the truth doesn't require that. It unveils itself when we're ready to discover that it's right there in the darkness, the light is there. It's right there in, like Gloria G said, in duality, we find the non-duality. In other words, we seem to be separate selves. There seem to be many different religions, but they're all really pointing to the same truth that is incontrovertible, but it must awaken within us. So strangely enough, it's like we're trying to trick this divine presence into waking up within us and all around us. So there's an inner connection and then there's an outer connection. And we were reflecting this morning on the necessity of community. And it's wonderful that we get to be with each other and we see the reflection of our own self in the eyes of the seeming other, but it's really our own self that we see. But ultimately, and Stephen reminded me, we get into community so we can be intimate with ourself. Because when I come to this place, I experience this level of love that is so intimate. And I feel all of you in my heart. You're not separate from me. And then there's this opportunity to grow and to evolve into what Barbara Marx Hubbard calls homo universalis, the universal human. And then we get to bring our gift to the world, whatever that gift might be, and to serve at a higher level. So this month I'm playing with the idea of a conversation with the universe. There was a wonderful book called The Universe is Calling, and every chapter ended with the same question. The universe is calling, are you listening? So how does the universe communicate with us? And the opening month, or opening week, I spoke about the doorways to the divine. Everything is a doorway to the divine. Usually, the greatest doorways are the ones that are the obstacles. Those are usually have the greatest gift for us. What we call problems or difficulties. What's in the way is the way. It's a wonderful book by Mark Nepo. What's in the way is the way. So if fear shows up, there's fear. Could we invite the fear in, or anger? We were talking about these shallow, what we call negative emotions, but they hold the light if we can open to them and we're not afraid to meet our fears and meet our judgment and meet the anger. In the anger, there is something usually right underneath it. Oftentimes it's a hurt, you know? And then we become whole integrated beings. So everything is a doorway. Even the stuff that doesn't appear to be a doorway. Disease is a doorway. It's called dis-ease. So where are we uncomfortable? It's so funny. I've been married to the same man for 45 years. Well, we've only been married 2 years because it's only been legal for a few years. But we've been together for 45 years, and he's up in New England, in Woodstock, New York, with his two sisters. And he said to me last Sunday, he said, "I need your spiritual counseling." He never asks me for that. I said, "So what can I help you with, honey?" And he says, "Well, every time I go home," he said, "within 5 minutes, I'm in a reactive state." And he says, "And then I'm a mess, and I just fly out of control." Anne-Marie's nodding her head. I know what he's talking. And so he says, "What can I do? What can I do?" And through just a simple inquiry, I said to him, "Have you noticed that this is a pattern that you're setting up for yourself, that you've programmed your mind?" His sister was arriving at 5 p.m. on Friday. He says, "By 5:05, I'll be a mess." He had already put it into his mind. I said, "Honey, you have programmed your mind to go into reactive mode 5 minutes after she arrives. Could you witness it just as a program in your head, and you don't have to follow that program? Remember when Mom would visit me and she'd push all my buttons and you would laugh?" And I would say, he'd say, "Why are you upset, David?" And I'd say, "Because my mother pushes all my buttons." And then he laughingly said, "That's because she installed them." And then I laughed. And then I realized, you know, I don't have to react. And so I'm happy to report after 3 days, they're getting along great. Those patterns haven't resurfaced. He has conquered his demons. So the very thing that was the obstacle became the opening for harmony. Yeah, so it is possible for us to break those old patterns, that old habit energy, and discover maybe the obstacle was a doorway for a deeper healing. So the very first day they got there, he does all this kind of research. He's a Google nut like Raul is, and he found out that, the famous singer, Bob Dylan, he had his house right north of Woodstock, New York. So they all went on a pilgrimage to Bob Dylan's house, and they had this intimate discovery time. My partner and his two sisters are getting along great. Isn't that nice? So that's a doorway. The second week I spoke about how depth seeks us. You know, Ralph Waldo Emerson said, "Deep calling unto deep always responds." So what if the universe is that deep something that's calling us to recognition? The deep wants to be revealed in us. And what does the deep show us? That's a great question, isn't it? It shows us that there's something more to us than just our belief system. Maybe there's a longing in the soul. There's an ache to belong to the universe. And I remember when Michael Gott was here, he said, "I have this ache and this longing in my heart for God." And I said to Michael, I said, "Well, what if that's God's longing for you?" And he said, "It changed everything. That there's something that longs for us, that aches for us, that wants to express through us." So last week I quoted the question, and the idea was the life in questions, that we're not here really to get answers at the Center for Spiritual Living. We're here to court the question. Rilke says, court the question. And so on my Zen calendar last week, it was a beautiful saying by Akin Khan. I have a photographic memory, I can't help it, so you'll have to forgive me if I quote things. And Akin Khan said, "If you ask these two questions your whole life, you will become a wise person." Well, you want to know what those two questions are, don't you? The first question is, why was I born? And the second question is, what do I take with me when I leave? And so we had satsang last Wednesday night, and because we were going to court the question in satsang, I asked this rather large circle, "Why were you born? And what will you take with you when you go?" And without exception, everybody answered something differently, you know? And isn't that beautiful? Which shows you there's no right answer. And then the question still lives on. So why was I born? I found myself saying that I was born here to bring the love to the world, because that's what I am. I've discovered after all the searching within and all the searching without, I used to look for love out there in the world, but I couldn't find it out there because it hadn't awoken in here. And when the love awoke in here, I saw love everywhere in the world, because it's the one seeing itself. And so what if the world will reflect back our consciousness? And what we see is not necessarily what is. What we see is who we are. The world is a mirror of our own consciousness. And by living in the question, then life becomes more exciting. So after 45 years of marriage, how can we be more intimate and more loving after 45 years than we were 45 years ago? And for all of you who are in relationships, it gets better with age. It gets deeper, it gets sweeter, doesn't it, Jen? Even in death, they're still here with us. So what if that's the payoff? That life isn't kind of like a goal thing where you get somewhere and you've arrived, but it is truly an ever-present unfolding of the alive nowness that is wanting to reveal itself, express itself. And then I added a third question to Akin Khan's little thing, and that is, what is true for me now? And when you live in that question, you'll find that the now keeps evolving. You know, it's so funny because when you live in awake awareness, we're teaching this wonderful class about the way of effortless mindfulness. And he talks about how when you move out of linear time, which has a past and a future, and you move into eternal time, the eternal now moment, in the eternal now moment, there's the past comes up and the future's there. Like Stephen was talking about hugging his son when he goes to college. So in the eternal now moment, there's a future moment when you're going to hug your son when he goes off to school. And there's a memory that maybe comes up where you feel this connection to something that's showing itself to you yet again with fresh eyes. And you begin to see it with new eyes. So the question is a wonderful place to hang out. And then this week, I'm asking that question, what is the world asking of us? This world that we inhabit, this world that lives in us, that's not separate from us. That's why it's so refreshing for me when Stephen leads a circle. I can then just be a receiver and take in the gift of awareness that shows me it's yet again another opportunity to feel this interbeingness, this interconnectedness with the world that's not separate from me. So I pulled out Mark Nepo's 7,000 Ways to Listen. And he talks about the world, and he says, we're worn open by the world. I was sharing with them in the revealing circle this morning that my heart keeps breaking open, and I feel the suffering of the planet. And that's a good thing, because then my heart can, I can offer my heart, my sensitivity, my compassion to the suffering of the world. And this is what he says, like it or not, to be in a conversation with the earth is to be worn open by the world. We cannot escape the weight of the world, but we must move through it. We cannot bypass our seeding in the dark if we are to blossom in the light. And we cannot avoid the tangle of our livingness in the world. So he says, though the brain may be located in the skull, he says, the mind is located in our entire being. And as well, though the ear may be located on the side of your head, our ability to listen is also located in our entire person. Could we listen with our hands? Could we listen with our eyes, with our heart? You know, different ways to listen. So he says, in the deepest embodied sense, and you know, Ernest Holmes says, you can have as much good in life as you can take. He says, but you can only take what you can embody. So he's talking about an embodied sense of listening. The ability to listen and receive makes an inlet in us. We're an inlet for the universe to reveal the passageway of its wisdom. Through our very lives, we each become a passageway of soul, worn open as the world of being keeps interchanging with the world of our own experience. Both slicing through us. Oh. And as much of our intelligence feels compelled to sort these streams and to keep them separate, our job in being alive is to let them merge and shape us. And in daily terms, the work of listening is to be constantly worn free of our preconceptions and our preferences so that nothing stands in the way of our own direct experience with life when the world is wanting to show us something. Wow. Never stops. This week, this Friday, they had a memorial service for Elijah Cummings. And I witnessed two ex-presidents, Bill Clinton and Barack Obama, doing a eulogy to this great man from Baltimore. And it's very interesting. You could tell that they all came from a very biblical background. And so Bill Clinton starts talking about Isaiah and how Isaiah was up on the mountain and he heard God ask this existential question, who will I send in to the city to take on the problems? And Isaiah said, send me, Lord. And then he referenced that Elijah Cummings was one of those who would say, send me. When the universe is calling, I will show up for that, whatever challenge it is. And what an incredible human being he was, as this great leader of our country. And then when Barack Obama got up there, he also referenced scripture, and he talked about the parable of the sower. And you know, they say the sower went out and he cast his seed, and some of the seed landed on rock and shriveled up in the sunlight. Some of the seed landed by the side of the road and began to root, but it didn't have enough soil so that it died. But a few seeds found good soil and they were to put their roots down and manifest as a beautiful demonstration of life. And he said Elijah Cummings was good soil. And he said, this man, and he looked at that, they said, the Honorable Elijah E. Cummings. And he says, you know, the word honorable is given to people when they're elected to office. He says, but let me tell you, Elijah Cummings was honorable before he was elected to Congress. And so he spoke in terms that were very glowing about how an individual can give their gift, no matter what it is. And he says, Elijah had two daughters, and he said, I am a father of two daughters. And there's something very sacred about the father-daughter relationship. And he said, and I tell my two daughters, he said, it is not a sign of weakness to be a kind human being. He said, a kind man and a humble man and a man of service is a strong man, not a weak man. And so you began to see in a different way that we're here to bring to the world what is ours. And when the universe says, who will go in? I guess we will go in. When they said they needed a minister here in Huntsville, Alabama, and I said, I don't want to go to Alabama. And my teacher said, you got to start somewhere. And so I came to Alabama, and you haven't gotten rid of me since. It's amazing how that 30 years. When the world calls, can you say yes, even though it may take you to a place that you don't think you want to be, but it ultimately is the right place for you. So yeah, so the world wears us open, and whatever the world is asking us to do, it's about discovering what is ours to do, like Elijah Cummings did. It's about opening to that challenge, even if it might be an uncomfortable challenge. It's about realizing that we have everything inherent within us to meet the challenge, and then ultimately to awaken to this presence that we all share, and then to awaken within to the many layers of our forgetfulness so that we can remember inherently that we are already whole amidst the appearance of being unwhole, and then to ultimately awaken out into the world, realizing that there is no outer, that it is all in. Stephen asked us to set an intention this morning in the circle, and I was aware that there are small intentions, like to show up for church on Sunday, which is a really good thing for all to do. It's a good discipline, good practice. But then there are long-term intentions to open my heart to an evolutionary process that may be uncomfortable as I evolve and grow into this homo universalis, this universal human. It might mean that I have to let go of some of my preconceived ideas of what the world should look like, because the world is going to give us everything we need, and oftentimes what we need is an uncomfortable thing. And so when the world gives us challenges, they're really opportunities. It may sound cliched, and I know it's a very religious sign thing, there are no problems, there are only opportunities, but it is true. What we call a problem is really an opportunity in disguise. So then we have a whole different way of seeing life. Then life is here for us. And those things that we call uncomfortable and scary and frightening, they hold the key to our own liberation when we stop resisting them and labeling them as wrong or bad. So I think the world works for us, and the world asks us to meet that threshold of our own discomfort and then to look again. So a little bit Mark Nepo again, his book, The One Life We're Given. We've all been given this one life. Isn't it amazing? And it's here for a very brief time. Now, I think we probably have many lifetimes, but when we become conscious that we have this life, then it really becomes a sacred opportunity to, in this period, the short period of time on planet Earth, could we commit ourselves to the deep inquiry within and discover the mystery of our belonging to the universe? Stephen has in his little chalkboard out there, the mythic journey of our human being. And I, as I read his circles there, I realized a myth is something that never happened but is always happening.
Oh, I don't understand what that means.
Yeah. It never happened, yet it's always happening. You know, it's the hero's journey. The hero usually has some great wounding which sets him off on a path. And then you find yourself in a center for spiritual living. And maybe your whole life falls apart. But then you discover it was supposed to fall apart so that something new could emerge. And then, you know, then instead of resisting it, you go, wow, this is, look again. So back to Mark Nepo. He uses the simple idea about respecting life and the one life we're giving. And then he looks into the word respect. You know, we do the heart salutation at the end of the service every Sunday, which says, I honor you, I respect you, I love you. Could we say that to our own self? Could we say that we respect this presence? We honor this presence, this very connection to the universe, to the divinity of our own being. And so he says the word respect comes from a root word which means to look again. He said the word respect means to look again. We respect our path, our way, and our sense of who we are when we look again to verify what we've seen and learned. Looking again is a worthwhile effort that often leads to a confirmation of grace. So look again when you have a heart attack and it takes you to such an intimate connection with life, then you realize maybe I had to touch death to really find life, to look again. Maybe I had to come to Alabama to discover the very thing that I was resisting was the very thing that embraced me. You know, the man that I've been with for 45 years, I said anybody but him. And look, I've been there for 45 years. So obviously I don't have a clue what's best for me. I mean, truly, look again. He says, I think of it as the effort to stay in a relationship with whatever we're creating as it keeps creating us. Life is creating us. We think we're the creator, but we're the creator and the creation, and life knows better than we do what's right for us. I'm a living proof of that. I said religion was the opiate of the people. They had to drag me into that Atlanta Center for Spiritual Living 35 years ago. And I'd sit in the back of the room and I would hear this man saying things that would trigger something within me that says, I know this already. There's a power within me. I know that already. I know that I create all this suffering by my stinking thinking. And I was really a mess. I was certifiable. I needed therapy. But I'd come every week and I'd sit in the back and I'd put my dollar in the plate and I was investing in my spiritual growth. And then I got up to $5. Now I tithe. And I realized I was investing in my own emergence. So what if that's why you sign up for shaman school and you pay the good dollars to grow this soul that we all have and that we may need to make an investment in? So he goes on to say, in a global culture obsessed with what is new, it's important to reclaim the age-old truth that nothing is really new. Huh, nothing is new. When Socrates says the unexamined life isn't worth living, that's as relevant today as it was 2,500, 3,000, however long ago Socrates was here. Yeah. The unexamined life isn't worth living. So what if we ask those questions? Why was I born? What do I take with me when I go? What is true for me today? And if you're not evolving and growing, then you're really, and there's a line in horticulture that says, you're either growing or you're dying. Huh. That's kind of like a little slap from the universe. Are you growing? Are you evolving? Are you discovering something that's really intimate? Our authentic relationship to everything we encounter makes us new. You know, it says in the book of Revelations, it says, and behold, I will make a new heaven and a new earth. We're talking metaphorically now. A new heaven would be an expanded consciousness, and a new earth would be a greater demonstration of wholeness and prosperity. Behold, I make a new heaven and a new earth, and the voice within declares, behold, I make all things new. So what if the world, through us, opening our hearts, is making us new? We can only see the new out there when there's the new is seeing it. So every time Teresa sings breathe, I move into the breath, and that breath is relevant right now. It's not yesterday's breath. It's not tomorrow's breath. It's the breath that's breathing me right now. When Stephen was doing the breath of fire in the circle in the shamanic tradition, all of a sudden, I'm going back to the Hindu teacher that I studied with 25 years ago, and we were doing pranayams, and it was the same experience of breathing the breath of fire, and yet I'm in present moment with this beautiful man, and yet that past moment is coming, and I'm feeling really strangely connected to everything. And then Stephen used the metaphor. He said, what if our hearts are like this beautiful flower, and each of us are hummingbirds drinking the nectar from each other's flowers? Now, I'm a sucker for a metaphor. So here I am, as invasive little hummingbird, drinking the nectar from each one of you. And all you have to do is open your hearts and let me drink. There's a beautiful Sufi saying that says, when the flower blossoms, the bees come uninvited. Let those who have ears to hear, hear. So what if we're here to just flower, to open our hearts, and to invite whomever to drink from that nectar, knowing that the more we give away, the more we experience the abundance of the universe. Look again, our authentic relationship to everything, everything, he said, makes us new. And our continual effort to remove everything in the way makes the glow inherent in all things knowable, and we begin to see with new eyes. The very thing that seems to be in the way is the way, that the light is right there inherent in the darkness, but the darkness comprehendeth it not. Remember the very first words in the Bible, we say it was, in the beginning God, and behold, darkness was on the face of the earth, and God said, let there be light. And the word that was used for light was Shekinah, and Shekinah is the light within. So what if this declaration is, out of the darkness, the light emerges, and we begin to see the darkness with a new way. Then the examined life, when it finds the darkness, it says, oh goody, let me dive into that darkness. Let me dive into that shadow and see that the light's right there. You know, when the sky is the darkest, that's when the stars shine the brightest. There's a metaphor in there somewhere. So he says here finally, one of the braveries of effort is the commitment to keep looking again and again, and to keep returning to what moves us and what intrigues us, to get curious about life, to get fascinated with your own diabolical darkness, you know, with your own shadow. I was sharing with a friend of mine, Brenda, that Carl Jung said, and may we fall down in an eternal embrace with the shadow when it shows up, eternally laughing and holding it in our embrace. Shadow comes into our life and we see our own shadow. Could we fall down laughing in an embrace, an eternal embrace with our own shadow? It's there for us. That's what he's saying. So he says this, I keep returning to what moves me and intrigues me, like a birder of mystery who returns to the sight, shy truths that need to know that we're serious before they'll reveal their song. He says the truths are shy, and they need us to coerce them to reveal their song. The darkness may be shy and needs us to stay present with it long enough. And if you stay with a fear, or if you stay with an anger, you might experience a hurt or a sense of betrayal or a sense of abandonment. And the more you stay with it, ultimately, you find that love was underneath it all. That it wasn't the big boogeyman that you needed to get rid of, but it was holding the key. So he says, sustained inquiry changes how we see and how we hear. And that changes how we experience our life and how we experience the world. I'll read that again. Sustained inquiry. In other words, instead of saying, why is this happening to me? How is this happening for me? You know, sustained inquiry. What is this showing me? What is the gift in the obstacle that I've labeled an obstacle or a problem? Huh? You know, where's the blessing? That's one of my favorite things. How is this blessing me? You know, that dirty SO, you know what? How is he showing me something in myself that I projected onto them? And that's why Jesus knew it when he said to love the enemy, to love those who do harm to you, because they're just a projection of your own unhealed stuff that you've labeled out there as the enemy. And when you can love the perceived enemy out there, you've really healed the enemy within yourself. That's what he's saying. So sustained inquiry changes how we see and how we hear, and that changes how we experience our own life and how we experience the world. Wow. How we experience the world. I was reflecting on what the world asks. And I fell into the Quran. I know, way too much in here. And in the Quran, it asks a question. Again, those questions. It says, what is the question? The Quran says, oh, am I not your Lord? This is the universe, Pachipapa and Pachimama saying, am I not your Lord? To which we, the creation, says, yes, we witness you. So what if this vast universe is asking us to witness it? To witness it, behold it. Then it goes to the Bible. Behold, it's telling us to behold. I, this presence, makes all things new. Our job is to behold it, to see it everywhere. Wow. And then I thought of Shakespeare, who said, to thine own self be true, and it must follow as the night the day. Thou canst not be false to any man when you're true to yourself. So what would it be like to be true to yourself? To discover this essence self that is more than who we thought we were, the label that we give ourselves, that we are actually the universe unveiling itself, unhiding itself, discovering itself, revealing itself, endlessly anew, and we're all the same. I pulled out my 365 days, Ernest Holmes, and it's just a bunch of spiritual mind treatments every day. And every single treatment, and I was going to read one, but I say the same thing. He says there's only one life, there's one spirit. And when we find it in here, we see it everywhere out there. It's the same spirit, the same life. And that's how the world experiences itself in multiplicity. And then Dr. Ernest Holmes says, we were here, we were created for the delight of the universe. Well, what does that mean? The universe wants to delight in itself through us. So it wants to paint through us and sing through us and play music through us and grow plants through us and experience wonder and awe and discovery. Always fresh, always new. Because you don't step in the stream the same place twice. And then, you know, it's interesting. Jody's mother made her transition a year ago tomorrow. Wasn't it, Jody? A year ago tomorrow. And the night before that, we were having a beautiful dinner, and one of the things we will be having in our auction is this candlelight dinner. We've slated it for sometime in January. We call it Divine Dining, and we find a really beautiful house with a great big dining room table, and then the board cooks the food. And last year we had it at Jody's mother's house, and it was on a Friday night, and Jody did the Shabbat blessing with the candles. And I felt like, what a sacred experience. And that was the last night that her mother was here on planet Earth, and the next morning she transitioned. So it's like I feel her presence, really intimate. Isn't that interesting? It's Michael's birthday, and it's Jane's birthday, because that's the day you return to your original nature. And then, you know, Rumi, when he made his transition, he says, don't grieve for me when I die. He says, that is my wedding day with the beloved. Wow. It's a different way of seeing things, isn't it? You're looking again because spirit was never born and spirit never dies. And then, you know, then we enter into this world in a more intimate way. I like what Stephen reminded me of. We enter into community so we can be intimate with ourselves. Well, that's kind of a strange thing to say, isn't it? That we get to be intimate with ourselves when we take the wall down that separates us. You know, I was speaking at Isilomar Convention, and it was maybe 1,000 people, and they wanted someone to open the convention who was a heart-centered person, so I was asked to do it. So they said, well, will you do a ritual that will open the heart of the thing? And I said, oh, sure. What are you going to do? I said, I don't know. And I said, I guess what I'll do is I'll just open my heart. And then if my heart's open, the invitation is open your own. So I heard Rumi come through me. Rumi said there's a window in the heart. And when the window in the heart is open, he says love can flow from heart to heart. He said, but if there's no wall between us, what need is there of a window? Ah. So when the wall's no longer there, we have no longer to protect ourselves, to be afraid of intimacy, and we open this heart space, just like you did with the metaphor of the hummingbird and the flower, then love can flow from heart to heart. And what you discover, if you're kind of a heart guy like I am, it's the same love. It doesn't have special love. It just has an equanimity of love. And it loves the bugs. I know some of you hate bugs, but it loves the bugs and the trees and the flowers. Last Sunday when I came and I was picking these lovely yellow flowers, I discovered that there were bumblebees sleeping in the flowers. And as I picked the flowers, they were just covered with bees. And, you know, bees are kind of sacred. Anybody think bees are kind of sacred? Yeah. And so, you know, I just had this intimate time with the bees, offering them to the spirea bush so that I could then bring the flowers to share with you. So what if the world is asking us to witness it? Behold, it's saying, am I not your? Yes, we witness you. It's asking us to be intimate with it. And it's really being intimate with itself because it needs us in order to have this interbeingness. Thich Nhat Hanh, the great Buddhist teacher, he says, you know, the miracle is not to walk on fire or to walk on water like Jesus was reputed to do. He said, but the miracle is to walk on this earth. He says, where every step is a sacred blessing that is truly holy ground. Moses heard the voice of the divine speaking through a bush that was lit up from within. And the voice says, take off your shoes, Moses, right where you stand is holy ground. So the world was asking him to take off what separates you from that intimate connection and feel grounded in that presence that's seeking to get our attention, that wants to know itself by means of us. And it does it in a unique sort of way, but it does require that we listen. So when he writes 7,000 ways to listen, he says, don't listen with your head. Listen with your heart. Listen with your feet. Listen with your ears. Listen to the sounds. And listen to what isn't being said. I love when I study with Eckhart Tolle. He says, don't listen to my words. He says, listen to the space between my words. You know, listen to the space between the words. We're teaching this effortless mindfulness, and it's kind of strange, and I absolutely love it because it's so, he says, it's about learning to know from not the mind. So the first thing they have us do is disconnect from the mind, and knowing is still there. You know, it's in a way knowing that I don't know, but something knows, and I don't know. I don't have a clue, but this something, it knows, this presence that we all share. Could we defer to that? Life has a greater answer for us than we do in our limited thinking. Wow. Then the mystery of our connection to the universe is so vast. And then we begin to enter into wonder and curiosity and fascination. And if we sit long enough, we can see the universe in a grain of sand and infinity in a wildflower. And then everything begins to preach to us. You know, this young lady that's in the shaman class, she has this beautiful hummingbird tattooed on her breast. And I didn't mean to ogle your breast, but that was the most beautiful hummingbird. I was right here, you know, and what if, yeah, it gives you a whole different way. And then Jody talks about Stephanie, her beautiful daughter, and they've discovered there's a device called the hummingbird, which they can use to help feed little babies through their umbilical cord. And so then look again. The hummingbird has resurrected herself here on Sunday morning, and I didn't know. You know, some people have hummingbird feeders. Every time I would do that, the ants would fill up the hummingbird feeders, so I stopped doing the hummingbird feeders. So instead, I just planted flowers. And I have so many hummingbirds, and they drink the nectar directly from the flowers, whether it's the salvia guaranetica or the sunflowers or whatever. They're just drinking away, and I'm witnessing it. Am I not your Lord? To which we say, yes, we witness you. Would be, what is the world asking of you? Jody mentioned the thing with trees. My partner, husband, I guess I'd call him that, he loves the trees, really. And this person moved into Five Points, and he's buying up some of the older houses, and the first thing he does is he cuts the trees down, the big old ones. And so Trey pulled up to the front of his house, and he says, can I speak with you for a second? And he was mowing his grass. It's lots of grass when there's no trees. So he turns off the lawnmower, and he says, yes, how can I help you? And Trey said, you know, in Five Points, we're trying to plant trees, not cut them down. And he says, get a life. And then Trey drove off the cat, and he said, well, I think I've ruined that relationship. But it did inspire him to take action. Spoke. He's the head of Neighborhood Watch. He spoke to some of the people in Neighborhood Watch, like Jane desperately needs a tree in her front yard. And so Trey said, I want to invest in trees. So he called the mayor's office. He called the city arborist. The city arborist came. Now there's this committee, and they're bringing this petition, which I know you're all going to sign, to the city council meeting to invest in planting trees in Huntsville and to sustaining some of the old ones that are here, not just willy-nilly take them down because you feel leaves are an inconvenience and you don't want to rake them. Now that's where an idea, a passion, the world was calling, maybe the trees were calling, and he took action. And you know, you feel better about yourself when you do one little thing. Bless you. What's the old saying? Act locally, think globally. Now I can't save the rainforest maybe, but I can plant a tree. And they say if you plant a tree, you plant immortality. So it just starts one little step at a time. And but it starts first by listening. So the universe is calling. Are you listening? So let's just stop for 1 second and invite the passageway of insight. It's Emerson that said, there is a stream whose source is hidden. And from whence it comes, I know not. But when it comes, I am a pensioner, I draw. So that stream of inspiration is coming from life herself, from the universe, from the world, from the cries of the world. Like Trey heard the cries of the trees, and he responded, yes, I witness you. Yes, I embrace you. Yes, I am here to love you, to serve you, and to remember that we are connected to one another, that everything is my own self. And so the tree in me bows to the tree in you, and the hummingbird in me bows to the hummingbird in you. And the life in me that was never born and never dies bows to that life in you, which was never born and never dies. And in that place, there is this essence that awakens, that smiles. Emerson called it an infinite presence that lies stretched in smiling repose at the center of all creation. And so I like to imagine this Cheshire cat within my heart that's smiling, that's opening to the world, that's offering the very best thing that I can, which is my compassionate heart, so that it can be a holding place and ultimately a healing place for the world. And so could we know that we are that holding space for each other, to be held in the embrace of the one that knows no other? And that's enough. To just hold each other in the grace of love in this holy instant where we are blessed beyond measure, where all other moments unfold from our quality involvement in this holy instant that we're sharing right now. It's so simple and yet so profound. Be still and know that I am God. Be still and know, be still, be.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. For more information, please visit www.cslhuntsville.org.